Mr. Cameron, Reel 7. We're talking about your arrival at the El Tahag Transit Camp. Would you stay at that camp long before being moved into position?
No, not a great deal of time. But I don't think it'd be a fortnight. When we got to Tahag, there was nothing there, just a stretch of sand and a whole bunch of tents slung down and, you know, just heaps of them. Stick their own tents up, 8-man tents. Whether they were 80 pounders or something, but anyway, 8-man to a tent. We had to stick our own lines up. We moved into those and were there in transit.
What were you doing during the 2 weeks?
Very little, with it was sort of routine guards around the camp, and it was the first time really that we'd been together as a regiment.
The whole lot of it.
96, and it was the first time there that I did a regimental guard. The first time the RSM had a front parade.
What was that like?
It was quite an experience. Different. We always worked just as batteries with the battery sergeant major. We had met the RSM on and off, seen them from a distance and things, but with the batteries being scattered and the troops being scattered, you never saw much of the RSM. Now, the RSM was the brother of our battery sergeant major. We called him Cowling. Bill Cowling was our sergeant major. I don't know his brother's name, but he came from Morley in Yorkshire, the Stout of Leeds. And the RSM was quite a soldier. Bill himself was, but the RSM had obviously been a regular, you know. And the, I remember particularly that regimental guard man, and he made a good job of it. He impressed me the way that he did it.
In what way?
Well, with the, I wouldn't say we were lackadaisical as a battery, but being out on gun sites and such, we weren't regimental as such. And we seemed to bring the regimental stuff onto us all in a push. And it should be up to the lads, you know. You've got to get a grip on yourself.
What sort of regimental thing?
Well, the way that he gave orders, and he wasn't satisfied with just slovenly drill and pulling me up all the way, put that on the same time.
What about Bull on your gear? Was he?
Well, yes, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to do it, but we had to really tighten up, you know, especially to go on his parade. You had to be spot on as much as you could be.
And you didn't mind that? You could?
Oh, no. No, that was more my type of soldier than that. Weird. Mm. But anyway, we were there about a fortnight.
Did you get used to that? I mean, you've been coming all the way around in the ship. Were you used to the climate by then? Or was it a bit of a...
Hardly. It was absolutely new to the majority of us. So, you know, I can't recollect any that I met who had been overseas before. Not at that time.
How did you cope with it, the heat?
I enjoyed it. I got to be a sun worshipper, I still am. But the one thing I've always tried to do is go out and get some real sun on my back since getting there to the Middle East. Never quite succeeded. I went to Spain once and it bloody rained for 10 days.
Were you aware of things like heat stroke or getting over sunburn?
Yes, it didn't affect me. But it did affect one or two of the lads. It was a bit too much for them, especially the fair-skinned blokes. You know, we were told to take precautions, but you know how it is. There's a lot. Don't take a deal of notice. But me, it didn't affect. The sun never seemed to affect me. Not the way it did the fair-haired blokes. You settled down, we got used to it, but we did contrast with the blokes who had been there, and I wouldn't say for how long, he'd maybe been there in the area 3 or 4 months or something, and we had just got off there, and we were a different race, a different colour. That was really the easy to try to get your knees round. That's where that came from, you know. You can look and say straight away, he's just come from.
Now, after 2 weeks, you were Where did you go then from the transit?
That's when we took out. I don't know how they split it up, but we finished up with it. My crew took over the gun site with the 3.7 mobile guns, but they were dug in and fenced in the gun pits. And the boss who took them over from it, obviously, been there quite a while. They had everything sorted out, and the gun site was such as you could just walk on, and they could walk off, and they could take over. And
the guns were mobile. Were they old?
Mobile guns, but they were put into gun pits and sandbagged up and built up with old petrol cans, the old 4 gallon petrol cans that used to swing. You should shove them full of sand and build them up like walls. You know. It was a 7th camp, but they've been there for a while.
You were still on a gun as a bombardier. What was the sort of daily routine during the time you were at Port Suez?
Mainly maintenance. You'd get up on the morning and have a roll call. Straight away, the guns to the gun crew's instrument, then to their instruments, and clean up. Make sure they were. It'd be an hour, couple hours. Maintenance.
Every day?
Every day.
What was that? What sort of maintenance? What was the sort of thing that you'd have to do on daily route?
Check oil levels in the buffers, check the air, there was an air system on there, the nipples, see the. And lining up, there was a lining up procedure with the guns, with the instruments. Now that was checked daily at that particular.
How did you check that?
No, it's going back a long while. But there was you had a naming mark somewhere in the vicinity of the camp. Can't remember what it was at that particular camp. But in any case, say, in this country, it would have been a church steeple in the distance. Now, the instruments would line up on the church steeple. They would inform us we'd line our guns up. Through the barrel, open the beach and through the barrel onto there, and then close up. And then the instruments would switch on, and we were connected to the instruments. And we had to balance our hand dials with the instrument dials, which were on the gun. And we used to check bearing, angle, and so on at 3 different points. That was to make sure that all 4 guns were synchronized with the instruments in the command post. That was a daily routine. Then we had a chart of tasks, various things to do on the gun.
What sort of thing?
Like I say, checking oil levels, checking your angle with a clinometer, task 1, so-and-so, task 2, so-and-so, and I used to take those up. When I was satisfied,
would you be more supervising now, or would you be doing it?
No, I was mainly supervising. Well, I did as much as the boys, but I was supposed to be just supervising. More often than not, I was showing them what to do, how to do it properly.
What about, was there a problem with the sand and dust of the desert?
That was the thing, that's why you had to have as much maintenance. You know, you kept cleaning and such. Especially when you had the camp seat. Most of those countries, you have a wind, you've probably heard about it, the mistral and so on. It was a camp seat in Egypt, you got that wind blowing constant all the time. And when it was blowing, the sand was blowing into everything, even your group, you chilled it with your ice and so on. No, that's really up there. It wasn't a big problem, but you had to keep on top of it.
So after this couple of hours of maintenance, what would you do then?
Well, I'd be around about 10 o'clock, which we could have half an hour break, and then that was into the canteen for a cup of tea or something.
Was that your own canteen, or would it be a naffy or what?
Our own. We did all our own stuff. There was nothing from outside. We self-contained as a troop. Had our own little canteen. What was it, the air for an evening? What to be on an evening and so on. shop ministries for the youngsters.
And that was an actual building or a tent?
Tent. All tentage. It was all tentage there. We had no buildings whatsoever.
So you'd pop in there just for a while? And then what?
Pop in there, or maybe just sit around outside around the front bit, or your own tent area where you slept and such like. And then we usually used to, after that, we'd do a bit going drill, a bit practice or anything.
Not actually firing, but
going through the motions. Mm-hmm. We'd run a going drill and change on with numbers, give the lads a bit change around so that they all knew the various jobs, you know. They'd probably do that at dinner time. And might not always be that. We'd sometimes, not very often, but sometimes around about the area, we might have a bit rifle or a bit marching drill, but it was a bit too hot, you know, for that. Mainly with two gun practice.
And where was your dinner served up? Would that be in the Naffy tent or the canteen?
The cookhouse tent.
And what was the food like that they were dishing up to you?
Well, it was what you expected, nothing flashy. There was a lot of that dried stuff then. What they call it? There was a name for it, but it was just, your potatoes was like hard chips, same as carrots, hard chips. You had to soak them in water, and there was a name for that sort of stuff.
Dehydrated
vegetables and so on.
And what about your meat? Was that tinned or fresh?
It's hard to remember. I don't remember any of the old meat. The appetite was such that you didn't worry much what the grub was, you just ate it. What I used to like, we got potatoes, and sometimes fresh ones, but they were big black ones, came from South Africa or somewhere. But we got quite a bit of rice. And the rice in place of potatoes. Now, what I've enjoyed that ever since. And I appreciate the rice, boiled rice, more or as much as boiled potatoes. I can eat it now in this country just the same and appreciate it on a dinner. Mm.
What would you do after dinner? I presume you'd be getting hot by then.
Relaxation.
So that
was relaxation, which we didn't relax until we all played football or cricket or something, and then any flat stretch roundabout, or Egyptian BT.
What's that?
Blanket pressing. Get down on your sharp point, out of it, where, in the shade.
Asleep.
Rest. You couldn't do much, it was real hot by midday, you know, and stay that way till around about 4.
Then what?
Another quick clean up around the guns, then, and then, now there's a thing. So in that type of situation, I remember particularly, we were on that site for quite a while, and I had a second in command, Lance Bombardier, Doug Large. Now he was a ginger type, you know, light head. And Doug was about the only one, I think, got any real affliction from malaria, but strangely enough, it's only for an hour. If we were out at the guns for an hour at get around 4 o'clock, I'd look around, spot Dover, go and get your head down, and they'd nip into the tent, which was just next door to the gun, of course. He'd get down, and everybody'd go and sling all the blankets on top of Dover. And he'd lie there and shiver till about 5 o'clock. And then he'd get up right as rain and we'd never have any affection again. But for stretches, that used to happen to Doug at 4 o'clock. Around about 4 o'clock in the evening, you could see the signs of Dewey, type of malaria, sort of malaria, say. And like I say, we all hit the blankets on and got him up in time for 10 at 5 o'clock. And he was right this way.
Well, did you have to take malaria precautions?
We didn't much there apart from the mosquito nets. We only had mosquito nets. Later on, yeah, we had to take the polymethacrin, but that's another story.
So, I'll come back to that then. So, you used to, after the afternoon break, you used to tidy up round the guns a bit, four-ish. Then what? What about the rest of the day?
Evening meal, it was something like, I don't remember the deal, what we used to eat like this way. You ate what you were given, and that was it. Probably only old margarine with a pretty good biscuit, about 6 by 4 and a 3/4 of an inch thick. So only old margarine on there and marmalade, and run off because it had melted, you know. And one of those biscuits, I cut it out, and I put the girlfriend's photo inside of it, and made a photo for me, one of those biscuits, and had it long enough, so I went on my own, yeah.
Then what would you do after you have your evening meal?
That was it, we were done, till the next morning, you made your own entertainment.
What sort of things would you do?
Not a great deal. There was nothing. We had no radio or anything. You know, it was getting a canteen if we could afford it. And a bottle and a sing song. And I'm not going to say what the songs what we sung. You know, it was entertaining each other. And of course, it was late for a while, so the football came out again. That was the main thing. It was kicking the ball about.
Were you allowed into Port Suez at all?
Very rare. We used to get the odd afternoon from midday. We used to get from midday and have to be back in camp for about 10:30 or something. I think it'd be about that too, but there wasn't a deal of entertainment. We got turns in that, you understand. You might get a day every 3 weeks or a month. That's the same a day, an afternoon.
What would you do in Port Suez?
Well, there was nothing. Go and see the sights, which first time overseas, you had to look round and watch them running about in their galabiers and knock a hell out their horses with their galleys, which you couldn't understand. And the kids used to be chasing around you, making, you know, the eggs of the eggs of the lemonade, and trying to sell you stuff. Well, we didn't have any money in any case, very little. So.
We warned about the brothels and things like that.
There wasn't a deal said about that, but it didn't affect us because we couldn't afford to go to them in any case. It wouldn't have made no difference. And we didn't say, they didn't cater for us. They knew we had no money, if you understand what I mean. So I didn't come across much brothel stuff, either in Suez, Port Said,
so it was, you were basically out for a walk out.
That's it. Have a look round and enjoy the sights, which were different.
Were you warned to go in twos or to, you know, be careful?
No, but there was parts which are out of bounds. There was out of quarters. Most out of quarters were out of bounds, but it was the same. Big red circle with a cross on it, if I remember that. It was a red cross in the centre of the circle. That was out of bounds, out of course. You didn't go in there. You were advised not to, and I didn't. I never heard of any trouble.
So that would be the end of a sort of typical day, you know, whatever you were doing in the evening. Then what time would you go to bed about?
Well, you could suit yourself. There was nothing. We weren't pushed, but if there was any rally around, we'd stay around 11 at night or something. We'd certainly be somebody out in a hurry, you know, we'd quieten down there.
Now, did you, I mean, you were there as anti-aircraft defences. Were you actually in action at all at that period?
No, we did very little around on that particular aircraft. We did very little. To the best I can remember, we saw one enemy aircraft, and it was so high that we didn't even engage it. It must have, I wouldn't know why, but it must have been either got lost or something, I would think. But of course, the desert fighting was going on then, in the way of the desert, and we were in a backwater. Like I tell you, I think I've told you before, we had a good war in that respect, but they take no time.
So how long were you there for?
I'd only have to guess, I'd say it was quite a while. It must have been there 12 months though. Must have been.
So that would take you to the back end of 1943. Now while you were there, I think they cut the battery in half and gave you some
that's
South Africa.
Right.
Could you tell us about that? What exactly happened?
Well, this, we were there settled, being long enough, and then they decided, which obviously I think we were more or less redundant because the fighting had gone away in the desert. They probably decided they could use a lot of gunners elsewhere, and they gave us Black Africans. And what we got from Becky Warner's. Lads from Becky Warner. We don't call it that now, but I wouldn't call it that. When I was at the Europeans, Becky Warner. There was other units, they got blacks from Basutoland and Swaziland, which they've all got different names now. But anyway, we got Becky Warner's. And I think, well, I'd say I was lucky, because I got chosen, it was myself as a bombardier, there was another bombardier, a Scots lad from the other troop, Bill Moyer from Dundee, there was a sergeant from Wakefield, Albert, forget his second name, and we had a lieutenant with us. Can't bring his name to mind, but we went off to just outside Cairo, and we collected these blacks on a camp, a training camp, and we had four 3.7 static guns lined up on a bit of playground, and we had to teach them basic gunnery.
Now, what was your initial impression of these new lads?
It was such a difference. That, you know what I mean? We never worked with blacks or anything. We had seen something of what the condition was in South Africa, in Durban at that time, and it seemed a shame. But these were blokes, they were pioneer corps. What they had been doing previously, I wouldn't know, but they were pioneer corps, and obviously being, say, pick and shovel men as such. But before we had anything to do with the blacks, we had their padre, Captain, with his collar on. And there was not only us, the people I've mentioned, there was others from other regiments who were picking other blacks up and instructing them. I think there were about two dozen of us, and this padre gave us a talk, and it was more what nowadays I appreciate was sort of apartheid. We had to treat the blacks. Well, we didn't have to treat them. We had to be standoffish, sort of. Well, it was no good telling, but it's what he said. You know what I mean? That probably grown up with them in South Africa or something, you know. He was more like a missionary type. And the blacks were used to be treated that way by the whites, you know. But these were good lads, and they were religious. They didn't drink, only odd ones amongst them. They didn't drink, they didn't smoke, and yet they got a fine ration. Take the Cairo fine. That did me a lot of good. I said, oh, a good smoker. And they used to have their own prayer meetings and things, you know. And they used to enjoy themselves on an evening, sitting around singing in their own battles there, singing songs. But they were more like children. We found them all very young-minded. The thing is, we didn't speak their language and they didn't speak English. But we did have a half a dozen of the blacks who did speak English. One especially, he had been a taxi driver, Steve. I always remember his name, not his name. He'd been the taxi driver in Johannesburg, and he was up there, okay. And it really, you know what I mean, given the opportunity, he would have been a really top gun, sort of. But he was intelligent. There was half a dozen of them who were out of it, English, and they were quite intelligent. But all the others, they gave you the impression of just coming off the African villages. But they did what they were told without any trouble at all. And of course, we couldn't shove them around there. And again, it wasn't our nature. They were in uniform, same as us. The colour didn't make any difference, not to any of our lands. It just came normal to treat them as normal troopers. We would tread around on us, and not always went. But it was I wouldn't say it was difficult, it was a bit funny at first, trying to instruct them in gunnery through an interpreter. But it was an interesting experience.
Did you try and pick up their language, or did they?
Quite a lot. I could speak quite a lot at the finish. But we were only there, actually, 3 weeks. We brought these fellows back after we'd given them basic training.
So how did they, I mean, you said they had to be taught, you know, they had a childlike attitude. How did they take to the gun? Because it's quite a complicated gun.
They're mimics. They all seem to have a gift for mimicry. I suppose that came from the way they grew up. Most kids, you know, in African villages, they were the same as if they had nothing to entertain themselves with. They would entertain themselves, but they were good mimics. And they could imitate. But you could only get one job into one black. You couldn't teach the black two jobs. He taught him one, and eventually he could do that well. But you could never get eight of them to switch around and away jobs, same as you could do with the white lads. You teach them one job, and they'd learn that, and they'd learn it properly, and you could depend on them doing it.
And would that include laying jobs, you know, the technical?
No, we finished, although we tried to teach them that, normally we finished up with, we'd have a couple of white corn layers, so it's a number two and number three, and the blacks providing the rest of the gun crew. And the white number one, of course, in charge of the gun. That was it worked out quite satisfactorily.
Had they made much progress in the first 3 weeks that you were outside Cairo?
Or? Surprising. It's surprising. With the help of these interpreters, eventually we could gather that the interpreters were telling them what we wanted them to say, and we could pick out for ourselves that they were learning. And the individual ones were learning such, and we could pick out who were good at what. And we basically got them, they worked 100% on us, but they were good enough for what we had been doing over the past 12 months.
Which was not much, is it?
Not much.
When you brought them back to your unit, I mean, was the unit, did you sort of mess together, or were things kept separate in the sort of like catering?
They had their own lines. At the top, on this camp, we put some 8-man tents up again, up at the top end of the lines, on the side of the gun side itself. And they had their own cookhouse and their own lines there. And we made a little bit of a candy for them. It's those sweet coconut bars and things they had. But they didn't have anything like the money we had. They weren't paid the same as us. I think they maybe had about, if I remember right, it wouldn't be a quarter of our pay. And we didn't have much. So I'll tell you what they had this time.
Would you mix with them much? I mean, was there any social?
We weren't supposed to. And I suppose, really, socially, we didn't. And when we were off duty, they were in their camp and stayed there, and we were in ours and stayed there. But I wouldn't say we wanted to or didn't want to. It was just the way they were. The blacks wanted to be on our.
Would you play sort of football with them and things like that?
No, we never mixed back then. But what we did do, there was always they were keen to learn. And there was always somebody willing to go up into their canteen and teach them English. A blackboard and a bit chalk and go through and give them the basic words, the cat's out on the mat sort of thing. And they were always keen to learn on that. And they would eat that up.